Welcome to the Cosmetic Course Podcast. My name is Adrian Richards, and today I'm going to be talking to Ron Myers about some issues which are very hot in the news at the moment regarding nurse prescribing. So I'm here again with Ron, who's a good friend of mine and is one of the managing directors of the Consulting Rooms, which is one of the foremost websites certainly in the UK, for any information you would like about the aesthetics industry in the UK. Ron, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, hi, Adrian.
Now, there's been an awful lot of controversy recently about remote prescribing. Could you just tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think this is something that has obviously been an issue within the industry ever since, I guess, 1994, when Botox first came into the market and was used for cosmetic treatments off-license. And a number of nurses back then were obviously involved with Collagen UK and were using collagen, and some of them came into using Botox under remote prescribing directions from a doctor usually. And this has, I guess, rumbled on for years and has gradually come to a little bit of a head over the last year or so, with two interested parties who are debating, I think, the argument quite publicly in magazines such as Cosmetic News and Body Language, regarding both sides of the argument as to whether or not they are right. So you have Intraderm, which is a guano-owned training company who also offers nurse independent prescribing courses in conjunction with De Montfort University in Leicester, and Harley Aesthetics, which I think have anywhere between 300 and 400 nurses, that many of whom would work under a remote prescribing stroke remote consultation business model, as they're not nurse independent prescribers.
So Harley Aesthetics, are they nurses that work on their own, or do they work for Harley Aesthetics?
Well, this is the interesting area. Many are run their own businesses, and I think this also relates to one of the points of debate regarding actually supply and administration of medicines anyway, whether or not they're done through remote consultation or not, is that nurses cannot run as far as I'm aware a limited company. And cannot buy prescription products through a wholesale route.
So, sorry, just go back, Ron. So nurses are not allowed to own a limited company. Is that right?
They're not allowed to be to operate under that legal entity. They are still seen as being separate from a legal entity. And so what they're not allowed to do is to actually buy injectable prescription products through a wholesale route,
right?
Themselves, and so that is an area whether they are a non-nurse prescriber, whether a nurse independent prescriber.
Right. So would a nurse independent prescriber be allowed to buy independently if they've done the course and everything?
Apparently not. Apparently not. They still need to have an association with a doctor.
Right. It's a really grey area, isn't it?
It is a grey area. And the other issues are, as well, relate to certainly to non-nurse prescribers as to what is and isn't acceptable from a consultation perspective. Certainly the NMC appear to be very clear on this with their advice to nurses. And there was an interesting, I mean, there have been a number of things that they published, but they also had a meeting that was organised by Intraderm, actually, back in May, where they invited nurses and doctors along to actually discuss this whole issue. And it was done under Chatham House rules, so that basically means that the meeting, unfortunately, wasn't minuted.
No.
But the idea was that people could go along in an open forum and without risking potentially their business model or registration to actually talk about this issue. And certainly the main points, according to Intraderm anyway on their website, it was that administering a drug without a written and signed direction from a prescriber in front of the nurse is against NMC standards, and they said it is illegal. Administering drugs immediately after telephone consultation using another patient's name medication is against NMC standards. This is illegal. And nurses are not allowed to receive wholesale stock unless they belong to the same legal entity as the supplying doctor. Self-employed nurses, i.e. separate legal entities, are not entitled to be sold prescription-only medicines by way of wholesale dealing. And that's MHRA guidelines.
Right.
So those are kind of three areas that they felt were points that they wanted to make clear to nurses who were operating in that business model. We've seen sight of a sort of a letter from Harley Aesthetics that has been circulated quite publicly, actually, to a number of people that seems to refute this and say that remote consultations are used routinely by NHS Scotland, and that they feel that because they have completed over 30,000 telephone remote consultations without a single claim or complaint, it's irrefutable that the telephone remote consultations carried out by Harley Aesthetics are thorough. So it's an interesting area.
But even nurses sort of working, you know, with Harley Aesthetics, if they do get a remote prescription, you know, they discuss it with the doctor, they shouldn't really be getting a delivery of the Botox and whatever directly to themselves. Is that
well,
right?
This is the area whether or not they can do under this sort of a patient group directive, which is you know, another area. So it is, say, as I say, confusing. It is a grey area, and it's not entirely clear as to you know, what is law and what is considered best practice. It seems as though there's more. From a GMC perspective, it seems as though that it's less clear.
Yeah.
But the NMC seems to have stated that, you know, that this isn't acceptable.
So what would your advice, Ron, be? So let's say there's two real groups of nurses considering starting in the aesthetic industry, or nurses already established. Just to sort of say that if a nurse works for a larger company, they're probably okay, aren't they?
Yes, I mean, if a nurse works for a larger company, is employed by a company such as, for instance, Skin or maybe Transform or something like that. And most of those companies, I believe, now would do an initial consultation with a doctor for Botox, probably initial treatment, and then maybe operate under a patient group directive for further injections provided by a nurse who wasn't a prescriber.
Okay.
That appears to have some basis in a CQC registered premises as well.
Okay.
Although, again, it's still not entirely clear because they say the PGD should not be used for routinely for off-license indications. And, of course, this is another area as well. Even if you are using a licensed product, such as Azulor, for instance, Bocature or Vistabel, of course, they're all only currently licensed for glabellar lines.
Which was the middle one you said there?
Bocature, that's the new, that's the licensed version of Xeomin now. They recently got a license only, it was announced at the FACE conference, actually.
Oh, right.
The other weekend.
So what's it called, Bocature?
Bocature, yes. It's in a 50-unit bar presentation. I think the price is around about £79, something in that region.
And it's a one-for-one equivalent with Botox, isn't it?
According to the according to Merck's Pharmaceuticals, they believe it's one-to-one equivalent with Vistabel.
Okay, so just getting back, Ron, if I could, to the nurse issue. So this is for independent nurses. The issue is really for them. What would your advice be, you know, to anyone, to a nurse, an independent nurse treating patients with Botox?
Well, I think at the moment it's difficult to give clear advice as to, you know, what is and isn't going to be acceptable from, at the end of the day, it's the NMC, I think, that is going to sort of make or break this. And if someone is reported to the NMC who's working under remote prescribing business model, say for instance with Harley Aesthetics or with any other organisation where the prescriber doesn't actually physically see the patient, as to whether or not the NMC will look at taking the ultimate sanction, which they claim they could strike them off the register.
So really, it's all sort of conjecture until we know what they're going to do.
Well, I think so. I mean, I think there needs to be some form of test case somewhere on the line that really looks in depth at this model to actually assess whether or not nurses could be jeopardising their registration, which yeah. I think is obviously key, because if they lose their registration, they're not going to be able to practice anyway.
Because the legislation sort of says that, you know, these prescription only medicines should be given, you know, by a doctor or under the guidance of a doctor, but doesn't actually say whether they must actually physically see the doctor in the same room, does it?
Well, and I think this is it. I think there are two aspects here. One revolves around, I guess, the nitty-gritty of interpretation of guidelines and what is and isn't illegal. And then the other relates around to more to best practice. And I think what the NMC have stated is really what what they consider to be best practice, which is if you're routinely using prescription medicines and you are a nurse and you're not a prescriber, is that the assessment really should be done by the prescriber, because I think especially when you're looking at aesthetic procedures, I think it can be difficult to assess, certainly via a telephone consult, even via maybe a video link as well, to fully assess that patient as to whether or not they're suitable, both from a medical and also potentially a psychological reason as well for prescription of Botox for the treatment of wrinkles. This also relates, of course, to sclerotherapy as well, sclerosants and other things that nurses may commonly use from an aesthetic perspective.
But obviously not dermal fillers, because they're not prescription-only medicines, are they, Ron?
Well, although many now contain lignocaine, of course, as well.
Yeah.
Which is that's another grey area as well, isn't it? So they contain a prescription medicine, but they're still classified as medical devices. But it does pertain to using lignocaine if you're going to use it as a nerve block.
Yeah.
From an anaesthesia perspective. So, you know, there are all sorts of issues that revolve around this marketplace that I think make it a little unclear, even actually for people who are prescribers themselves as well. And that also relates to, for instance, you know, if you're using Botox, for instance, using that on multiple patients.
Yeah.
You know, which is why I think the whole route of the licensed versions of the products have gone towards smaller vial sizes, as you've seen, both with Azulor, Botox and Bocature, sorry, Vistabel and Bocature.
Yeah.
Is that they try to form a kind of an appropriate vial size around potentially the maximum amount you might use for a glabella in a single patient.
Yeah.
And then
but I think a lot of practitioners do find those amounts rather small, don't they?
Well, I would agree. And so I think in practice, if you've got a busy clinic and you're treating a number of patients or clients one after the other, then I think it does make it certainly quite cumbersome to make up lots and lots of vials for individual patients. So it's it is going to be an interesting area. I think it will come to a head at some point, but only I think if there is a test case that's actually put through the NMC. So if somebody whistleblows and a nurse actually goes through that route in one way or another, then it will be clarified.
So, Ron, so your feeling is that there's going to be a lot of debate about this nurse prescribing issue until a test case goes through?
Yes, I would say so. I mean, at the end of the day, there is potentially, this is a lucrative marketplace, and I think especially for nurses that do operate in that remote sort of prescribing business model where they don't have many overheads, but where they service salons, Many, I think, are just, forging ahead and keeping going, doing what they're doing, until I think it does become clear one way or another. Which, of course, if you're putting together a business, and certainly a long-term business model, there is that obviously clear element of risk there if that area grey becomes black and you're on the wrong side of it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure whether or not that will also pertain in some way, shape, or form to the people who are prescribing the products. So in other words, the doctors, dentists, or even nursing independent prescribers as well, who are actually charging for this business model, which of course they are. So they're charging for the service.
Yeah. So I think what we'll probably need to do, Ron, is keep an eye on this area and perhaps revisit it when there's more definite, concrete information on it.
I would agree. I think it's important that people know at least one way or another, whether they're operating on a valid long-term business model, I think is the key.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, thanks for that, Ron. I just thought I'd ask you, just change the subject slightly, about the FACE conference. It was a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it? I hear it was a great success.
Yes, it was. It was a very well attended meeting. We had 380 delegates attend, about 45 different speakers, and I think over 40 exhibitors as well. And the evening event, the social event, was at the Natural History Museum. There were 500 people there, so that was probably, I think, the biggest social event that I've been to within our industry. So it definitely shows, I think, the level of interest in learning and education revolving around facial aesthetics.
And partying.
And partying as well, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, which I guess if you say that 500 went to the party rather than the 380 of the conference, you would say that, certainly the party was more successful.
Yeah. Well, I suppose you've got to include the people that were demonstrating and showing, at the actual conference, haven't you, as well as the delegates.
True. There were obviously some exhibitors there as well, so.
Yeah. So overall, you feel it was a success, and the increased numbers just sort of show how much more popular the industry is becoming, isn't it? And more people doing it. And
also, I think, it also shows as well the areas of debate that are even out there amongst what I would perceive to be some of the most experienced cosmetic injectors in the world. People like Alistair Carruthers, Timothy Flynn, Conrad DeBoer, who are debating more about certainly the use of fillers and where you use fillers now. And certainly people like Conrad DeBoer have would certainly propose to use fillers more from a point of view of mid-face contouring to correct nasolabial lines and even tear troughs rather than directly treating those areas themselves. Which some people may feel is slightly controversial, but we've come a long way from, even in the last 5 years, from using fillers to really fill out lines and wrinkles or correct deformities to really looking at this whole issue of total facial contouring and vectors and where you're placing, especially now, some of the larger volume products such as Perlane Sub-Q or Juvederm Ultra.
Yeah, it is all changing. As you say, it's a constantly evolving industry. And perhaps we'll talk about some of those evolvements in the next podcast. So, Ron, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you, Adrian.
And I'm sure we'll be talking again in a future episode, and perhaps you could update us on the nurse prescribing issues at that point.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you.
So thank you very much for listening to the podcast, and a big thank you to Ron for sharing his thoughts on this very controversial subject with us today. As I've mentioned, we'd love any feedback on the podcasts. If you wanted to do this in audio format, you could just send us an MP3 recording from your iPhone. You can just do a simple recording on the voice memo thing there. Email it to me, adrian@cosmeticcourses.co.uk, and we'll be happy to play that in future episodes. If you've got any questions you'd like me to answer, please email me at adrian@cosmeticcourses.co.uk, and I'll ask the experts the answers in future episodes. So again, thank you for listening. We do appreciate it, and we hope you'll be able to tune in next time.